Alrighty, let's rock this thing. 3, 2, 1. Good afternoon. Today is Wednesday, May the 1st, 121st day of the new year. Join us this afternoon. Humboldt County Supervisor, I kind of feel like out of the fighting third, Mark Lovelace. some kind of call like that. Yeah.
The fighting third. I like that.
Okay. Jeez. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Oh, I am plugging away. So I guess that's not bad. Yeah. This afternoon, we got a couple of different things to talk about. Mark had the opportunity to attend a conference in Sacramento last week. We'll talk a bit about that and the opportunities that the Bay not only has, but some of the foundational steps that need to occur also to really maximize some of the different economic development elements of Humboldt Bay. And we'll also talk a little bit about some of the small business support efforts that the county does. You may not hear about some of the things. Well, if you're not in business, you may or may not. And if you're not in the right niche, you may or may not. But that doesn't necessarily mean that things aren't occurring. So we'll talk about that also when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say. It's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank. Our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time, 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Humboldt County Supervisor Mark Lovelace. But before we do, our quote this very afternoon comes from Galileo. Quote, building tension now. Quote, I do not feel obligated to believe that there's the same God. Try that again. I do not feel obligated to believe that the same God who has endowed us with sense, reason, and intellect has intended us to forego their use. Why don't you read that one? I butched it twice. The double that threw me.
I do not feel obliged to believe that the same God who has endowed us with sense, reason, and intellect has intended us to forego their use. How's that?
That's good.
You just eliminated one of the apparently.
Yeah. So I strike that one out. There we go. Yeah. Now it makes more sense to me too. When we talk about natural resources, Mark, and the hooking it to economic development, there is a segment of any community that just pulls back and says, oh my God, no way. How, when you're talking about Bay development or any of the other options that are out there, get that segment to go, wait a minute, let me at least tell you what the idea is here first. Then you throw in the overlay of water or in water, and it probably becomes even more visceral a response. How do you kind of say, wait a minute, let me tell you the idea and then have an opinion?
Well, there's an interesting question, and that really gets into questions of reach, of who, you know, when you're pushing an issue forward in the community, who can reach different sides, different sectors of the community. And, you know, there's kind of a truism that to some degree, when you have your pre-existing divide in any given community, whether it's left, right, whether it's, you know, whatever you want to, however
down,
you want to do it,
out, yeah.
Yeah, that each side can only speak to their own base to some degree. And so they have difficulty being able to reach across and deliver in that way. And so there's a need for folks on each side to recognize that they have to not try to reach across and bring someone who has never been on the same side with them over to their side. They need to try to bring their folks a little more toward the other side and say, it's good for us to work together. It's good for us to not just anchor, you know, our absolutist position on either side, but to try to say, you know, what can we do to, you know, move a little closer to, you know, getting the community as a whole on board. You know, and so that's, you know, one of the key things that sometimes is difficult to figure out is, you know, not how do you bring folks over from the other side, but how do you bring your own folks over.
So with discussions about Humboldt Bay and the whole aquaculture, I can remember, boy, do I sound old, decades ago when Lori Lazio was talking about salmon farming. Mm-hmm. Oh, my immediate response. I would imagine that if the oysters that are in the bay currently hadn't been historical back into the 20s, that if somebody said, you know, I want to put some oysters in your bay, you know, that there would be that kind of reaction. So the thought of expanding an existing, does that make it easier to accomplish, or does it make it more challenging with people arguing that you're getting close to the carrying capacity, that tipping point, we don't, and arguments down that road?
Well, I think one of the big issues, you know, big differences between oyster farming and salmon farming is that, you know, oysters tend to not swim a whole lot. Yeah, they don't, you know, oysters naturally don't go up and down rivers and out into the ocean and back into the bay. They pretty much stay in one place. They're kind of ideal for farming. Trying to take a wild fish like
and
a salmon.
And they have no legs.
Yeah, that kind of limits their mobility. Yeah, taking a, then again, fish have no legs either, so, you know, they do have fins, and that helps.
Yeah.
But so taking an animal, you know, a fish like a salmon that is, you know, the definition of wild and has a broad territory and trying to confine it into a pen is more objectionable to a lot of folks. But oysters are, I think, they're literally a different animal. There are things that are being done here in Humboldt Bay to help to expand our oyster fisheries, and that the Harbor District has been, you know, the lead on. And at this conference I was just at down in Sacramento yesterday, the annual fish forum, they call it, from the Joint Committee on Fisheries and Aquaculture, the topic of the Humboldt Bay's oyster pre-permitting program came up, and it was clear from the comments that were made that it's being watched not just around here, it's being watched up and down the West Coast as a model for how to expand an industry that really is ideally suited for small business in every way except the permitting costs, because it's not just in the coastal zone, it's in the ocean, it's in the state, you know, the tidelands of the state. It's in, tends to be in very sensitive areas where it's done. And so the permitting that is required, one speaker there, John Finger from Hog Island Oyster Company, he said that the permitting can run $150,000 to $200,000 to get a operation up and running, which makes it just not doable for anyone trying to start it as, again, as a small business. What the Harbor District's doing is they're doing that permitting on the broad scale. They're saying, we will take on that permitting process, spend that, basically, you know, it's going to cost the same whether you're doing, you know, 5 acres or 50 acres of, you know, that you're going to be doing that permitting for, largely. And so they're doing that once and then being able to go through, and I'm not sure ultimately whether they're going to be leasing plots for the oysters or how that end of it will work. But the idea is to buy down the cost, the entry cost for someone to be able to start a small business.
KINS News and Information Times 319. We'll be back with more from Mark Lovelace.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. For years, the Eel River was the state's second largest source of steelhead and third largest of salmon. A UC Davis study estimates it once produced more than 1 million fish annually. This has been replaced by unpredictability. Last year saw a good salmon run, but some years it is very small. Several causes are cited, but all agree the Eel River ecosystem has been degraded. Now a task force of volunteers has come together to pinpoint the reasons and work to restore the watershed. The Eel River Task Force consists of public agencies, Indian tribes, conservation organizations, and others committed to establishing a scientific baseline of the causes of the decline and what might be done to reverse it. The members agree, no finger pointing. A plan of solutions must fulfill legal responsibilities to protect endangered species while also respecting private property rights. It will be a big job, but a healthy Eel River is worthwhile for all Humboldt County. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the betterment of our communities.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 324. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mark Lovelace. Mark, the concept of more oysters in the bay seems pretty reasonable. Has it not occurred because of the permitting costs that you were alluding to in the last segment? Is it zoning? Is it turf battles? Is it lack of market demand? Why hasn't it expanded prior to this point?
I couldn't speak to the long history of it. I know that there had been some issues with the health of the bay longer ago that certainly contributes to it. And that becomes an issue where if we want to support businesses, particularly fisheries related businesses, we have to take care of things upstream. You know, the bay is the catch basin for all of the tributaries that dump into it. And whether we're dealing with sediment or pollutants or lack of shade that causes the water coming in to be too warm. There's a lot of things that can happen upstream that can be problematic. Further back, the bay did have a lot more chemical dependent industries with wood treatment. There's a lot of
With the lumber mills and boats and everything right on
there
the
there are
water.
A number of things that were problematic there, and we still have some legacy of that, but we're slowly working our way through that. And so these are all good points about how when we're working on cleaning up our watersheds, we're supporting business. When we're working on cleaning up former industrial sites that are polluted, we're doing that to support business. And we're trying to, for one, clean up for industries that depend upon clean water and a good environment, like oyster farming, like fisheries, but also so that those sites are available for someone else to come in and use. When a business ends, whether they go out of business or they retire or, the industry just moves on and leaves them behind in some way, if they leave a site that's not ready for reuse, that impacts everybody. We know we have a lot of business needs, a lot of need for industrial sites in Humboldt County, and some of our prime sites are sitting unusable because they haven't been cleaned up. And if we can get on that, we can accomplish all these multiple benefits to help our economy, help existing businesses, help new businesses move in, and help with beautification of the community, because there's certainly a lot of ugly old industrial sites that could benefit from new industry.
Currently, how are those sites paid for? We know about the cleanup and the permitting and this and that, but wasn't there some kind of was it a fee? Or has it come out of the general fund at the state to go to the brownfields? Where did that money come from?
A lot of different tools that have been out there or that are out there. One of those was redevelopment, which could be used to help clean that up. But that's gone. But when we look at these kinds of things, what we're recognizing is that, the tools that we basically have two options. One is to just say the property owner is responsible for leaving their property in good condition.
But if you or I fold up our tents and leave, there's nothing left.
Yeah, and that's kind of the problem, if,
particularly with some of these large industrial sites.
Yeah,
or
with business industrial sites that aren't owned by someone who feels any responsibility for the local community. If they're remotely owned, and then it's just you leave and you're gone.
Or you don't have the money.
But we recognize that basically the options would be to either require the property owner to leave it in reusable condition, or to go after them or their insurance company if they have something to, if they've left it in, illegally contaminated, then they have a liability there. But the other option is to recognize that we have a broader interest, you know, in the community in seeing those sites cleaned up. And that's when government steps in with, you know, the offer of money, the offer of assistance to be able to do this. And, you know, that's the typical carrot and the stick. One, we say, you know, the regulatory side saying you have to clean it up. You've left this contaminated. You've got, you know, toxins on there and you need to deal with it. And two, here's some tools to help get it done.
Certainly, if somebody's looking at a long-term ownership position, yeah, I mean, it would take care of it. I'm thinking of some of these mills that have gone out of business. Mm-hmm. You want to sue me? Great. So? Mm-hmm. It's over. I mean, mm-hmm. there's nothing there. So in that kind of scenario, then the state will come in or the county will come in with and help direct the state or the feds. Or where do those brownfield dollars and those other things, is that from typically the county or the governmental jurisdiction that's involved in that location?
The county or city might have a role in it, but the funding and the resources are typically going to come from either state or federal programs, many of which have gone away. And
yeah, we're seeing that's kind of those are older programs.
Yeah, the Superfund, the again, redevelopment, various other tools that have been out there to help to get these kinds of things done. So, but just recognizing that cleaning up these properties is something that's good for the community, good for the environment, and good for business.
It's 3:30.
Decade of Difference presents a brand new competition, Innovate, a business challenge opportunity to pitch your creative idea. First step, upload a 60 to 90 second elevator pitch highlighting your business venture idea by March 29th. 40 finalists will be selected to move on to phase two. But don't wait. First 100 entries receive a free iTunes gift card. To upload your video and get more information, visit decadeofdifference.org. A grand prize of up to $2,500 will be awarded. Don't wait. Innovate.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Humboldt County Supervisor Mark Lovelace. With consideration, Mark, about some of the different efforts that the county is doing for surety, I guess, for small business or for business in general. I mean, you use the word help, and then it implies that somebody's getting it and somebody's not. Instead of, yeah, and it's not really the case. How critical is the general plan from your perspective in assisting business of any size in Humboldt County?
Well, when we're talking about the oyster farming, the pre-permitting there, the general plan is the same idea but on a massive countywide scale. The idea of the general plan is to figure out what are the things we want to accomplish, what do we want the county to look like over the next 20 years. Where do we want to see different kinds of industry? Where do we want to see different kinds of development? And then to analyze the impacts of that on the global scale, you know, for the entire county, through an EIR that covers, you know, all of that. And that then, once that's been done, when you have a project that wants to come in, whether it's residential, whether it's commercial, whether it's industrial, they're going to a site that has already been planned and zoned through the general plan for that use with, you know, specific limitations or conditions put upon it, that as long as you're building, you know, no more than this tall, this far back from, you know, the roads, you're providing this many parking spaces, whatever the things are there, if you're building within that envelope, then the impacts have already been studied so that you then don't have to go through the conditional use permit process, the EIR process, these kinds of things.
And that would take care of some of the other study, you know, the cultural studies and some of the bug studies and all those types of things that are often needed, or are those more contemporary and still need to occur at the time of that development?
There can be, depending upon the specifics, you know, one of the things that we know is that when we're doing this, we can't foresee every possible use that's going to be considered for a given location. And so, you know, as much as we try to come up with something that's going to be global, we also recognize that the next, you know, as soon as we approve it, the next day someone's going to come in with a project that looks really, really good, but it's not quite the perfect fit. You know, there's something that's outside of the envelope there. And so, yeah, there's always the potential for, you know, something of that sort. But, you know, the idea is to try to make it as meaningful as possible by coming up with as many specifics as possible. And that means that it has to be, the general plan has to have some teeth to it. And when we start getting away from, you know, that in this kind of situation, you shall do this, you shall do that, and get to should, which is more comfortable language for a lot of folks, but what that means is there's no longer any firm guidance for what happens, and the result is that more projects end up being stuck in a deliberative process where they may or may not be approved.
Language might be a good term.
Yeah, it's, you know, specificity is good. Having something where, you know, someone's looking at, I want to build this kind of project, or I want to start this kind of company here at this location, and here's what I have to do. And when it's clear and you've got basically, you know, a clear set of guidelines to tell you what you have to do there, that's helpful. When you have, well, you should do this, you know, the county may require X or may not require X, it sounds more comforting, but the reality is there's a lack of clarity there.
And things get then open to interpretation. And
exactly.
That's where the issue, really, yeah. I think, for at least the folks I've talked to, that's where it starts going sideways real quick.
Yeah.
You know, did I get Mark on a good day or not?
Yeah. Or you go planner shopping and, you know, trying to find the right.
Yeah,
you know,
something's on sale for
25%
off.
The right planner, the right inspector, or, you know, these kinds of things. You get to that situation where those that have more means to work the process, yeah, have a higher likelihood of being able to get something through, rather than, you know, someone wants to start a small business coming in and being able to say, just tell me what the rules are so I can do it. And if what they get is, well, the rules might be this and they might be that, it depends, because we don't have any specifics in our general plan, that's not going to help folks.
Yeah, or it depends on what color you choose.
Yeah.
Or what plant you want to put in the planter, that kind of stuff. I would suggest a lot of folks wanting to get into business don't realize that stuff that all influences the determination of the permits that they get. Yeah, I like a maple tree. Well, I'm sorry, this is not an area where you can plant a maple tree. Well, what do you mean? There's one across the street. Wow, but that was something different.
Yeah,
getting into that kind of stuff where then you do have that feeling of Big Brother stepping over you or running you over and not understanding the why,
or worse, when you have that feeling that the rules are being made up as we go along. And that's been one of the complaints that we've heard again and again over the last few years, and that's all because the 1984 framework plan just doesn't have, you know, a level of specificity to it. It's not clear, and it is wide open to interpretation. And that's why all along this process, the goal has been to do a fundamental rewrite of the whole thing. That's direction that was provided by the Board of Supervisors based on a huge amount of public input, and simply dusting off the existing plan and making some minor tweaks to it isn't going to help anybody.
Computers?
Yeah. Yeah.
What's things a computer?
Things that, you know, were never even thought of back then. You know, a lot has changed since 1984. And, you know,
I have.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
You've got more hair now, I see, right?
Yeah. So. I'm a little bit bigger in certain areas, a little thinner in others, smart guy. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:43. We'll be back with more from Mark Lovelace.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. and on Sundays, 9:30 morning mass and 12:30 Spanish mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:45. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mark Lovelace. Mark, some of the different efforts that are a little bit more specific rather than broad-based for small business or for businesses in general that the county is doing to make it more likely that a business might be successful in our area. Does anything really leap out at you as saying this is an area we've done? Because we've all heard mm-hmm. about redevelopment mm-hmm. not being there. What about some of the things that are there?
Well, one of the things that the county has been doing for the last few years that I know a lot of folks have heard about is this branding effort called Humboldt Made, which was to help support a lot of our small food producers so that they can grow to be bigger food producers and actually export foods out of the area. And with any kind of a small business like this, you know, whether we're talking oyster farmers, you know, there's a whole bunch of different pieces to it. There's the oyster farming itself. There's the scientific and permitting and engineering and all of that side that someone has to know to be able to navigate the system and go through it. But then there's also the distribution and the sale and the marketing, and there can be
the business
processing,
side of it.
Processing and packaging and all of these other kinds of things, to where you start recognizing that just being a farmer of whatever kind doesn't give you everything that you need to be successful in that. Just being able to make a really good hot sauce doesn't give you everything that you need to be able to be successful in it. And the more that we can look at what are all the support industries that a lot of these companies need together, and how can we help fill those in? So there's been a lot of interest in, like I said, with the Humboldt Made, it's kind of trying to see if we can do marketing on the broad scale for all of these kinds of products that are coming out of Humboldt County. Everything from food products to, you know, glassware to, you know, it's even being tied in with our redwood industry. There's a lot of different things that are coming together on that.
Couldn't really do a business incubator, could you? Or yeah, some of these ads that are running that say, you know, here's the office staff support, and you come in and you know rent a room when you need to, kind of thing, or use the facilities. It almost sounds like Food Works with a tweak, something like this with another tweak. I mean, is that kind of what the general gist of this is?
Well, there's a lot of different ways to incubate small business. And, you know, an incubator, a physical location where you have all these, you know, support services is one piece of it. But there's other things, such as some businesses that, you know, are really trying to, businesses that want to be able to bottle and package products in certain ways are finding, you know, on the small business level, you can't take on that kind of facility. A bottling facility, a co-packing facility is a costly endeavor. And it can't be done on the small scale. But do we have enough businesses that can come together to be able to support that? And that becomes its own, you know, could be its own freestanding business that benefits all of these other local businesses. The marketing arm, can we do this marketing so that not every small business has to be flying to all these trade shows around the country for specialty foods or for whatever to sell their wares or to place ads or to do other things to get their name out there? Other pieces with processing, meat packing, these kinds of things. Yeah, there's and produce packing. If you want to sell produce outside of the area, you know, rather than just selling it in your local stores, you know, there has to be some way to. Yeah, it's a very different endeavor than taking it to the farmer's market.
Yeah, packaging, boxing, transportation.
Yeah,
the whole nine
yards. And so there's a lot of these kinds of support industries that, when the county gets involved and starts figuring out what are the things that none of these individual businesses individually can do by themselves, but we can identify a need and try to find a way to fill it. Not the county.
More of a coordination effort.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean the county is going to fill it, you know, that the county is going to start a processing center or a co-packing facility or these kinds of things. But we're going to figure out if there's enough business there to support it, how can we help make it happen? And yeah, that can get into site identification, pre-permitting for site identification, making sure that there's clarity for all the things that have to happen to pull it together. Can we help with financing? Are there
communication also? I would think.
And so those are the kinds of things that we can do, and we see it being successful. Humboldt Made. I just attended a dinner last week where some buyers from Whole Foods and Tony's Fine Foods were up here in Humboldt County because they'd become aware that we had enough of these really excellent small businesses up here that they wanted to check them out, not just have them come one at a time down to their door.
Almost a critical mass.
Yeah, they wanted to come up here, and they get it. They see that this is a place that has a focus on high-quality specialty foods, and they can really work to bring those into their system now.
Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
We've been talking shop this afternoon with Mark Lovelace. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.